In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, I'm going to be talking to Brennan Dunn about how to run successful webinars. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 209. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products. Whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it, I'm Mike.
And I'm Brennan.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. How are you doing this week, Brennan?
I'm good. And I've broke ground finally on my new course, so things are good.
Excellent. If you're not familiar with who Brennan is, I want to give you a quick introduction to him. He is the founder of PlanScope. He's written several books and courses on consulting, which you can find at doubleyourfreelancing.com. And he's also a former speaker at MicroConf and will also be speaking at the upcoming MicroConf Europe in Prague. So thanks and welcome to the show, Brennan.
Yeah, thanks, Mike.
So today we're going to be talking a little bit about how to run successful webinars. And Brennan, you've run quite a few webinars. And I think one of the things that we should start off with is when you're first looking to put together a webinar and considering doing it, what are some of the first things that you should think about? I mean, you know, is there target audiences you should have in mind? What's the first thing they should start doing?
So first off, I think you need to realize what the goal of the webinar is, both for you and the audience. So for you, it's probably to promote or sell a product of yours. In your case, with AutoChark, you'd probably be wanting to teach people something about security so that ultimately they can understand why it's important to have a secure, you know, infrastructure, which will then ultimately lead them to AutoChark, right? So I think you need to figure out both what the role of the webinar is, and on top of that, what the takeaways are for the attendees. So the target audience, I think it's probably not that hard to determine if you've already have a product in mind that the webinar is for. So if you've got a info product or a software product or whatever it might be, hopefully you already know who the ideal user is, right? So that's probably the easier part if you've got a product in mind. But a really good webinar is meant to, it's kind of like an interactive blog post, I think, in that you're teaching something, but it's also interactive. So people can ask you to clarify something or have live Q&A and do a lot of really fun things that you really can't do traditionally through like a newsletter or through blogging or whatever else.
Yeah, when I was putting together my first webinar for AutoShark, one of the things that kind of jumped right into my mind was, I mean, obviously there's a reason I'm doing the webinar. It's because I want to help bring awareness for AutoShark and help drive sales and things like that. But the key thing that came to my mind first was, what's in it for the person who's come into the webinar? Why should they even care? Why should they spend the 45 minutes to an hour even bothering coming to the webinar? And what can I offer them that is going to essentially entice them to come and attend?
Right.
It's sort of marketing 101, but what's in it for me is really the underlying question.
Oh, it should be. And I think you really do need to be respectful of the person's time and really understand that even if you are trying to sell something, I think that the webinar itself should be valuable in its own right, even if you're not selling anything. So, you know, I think you really need to think, even if nobody buys, will they still walk away from this event thinking, you know what, it was worthwhile for me to attend? And that's why I'm a big fan of like, you know, a training webinar or something like that versus some of the kind of like seedier parts of the internet might have webinars, which are more like pitching people on timeshares. I'm very big on having a very dense educational webinar that coincides and aligns with whatever product I'm trying to, you know, upsell.
Yeah, it's almost the difference between doing an educational webinar versus an education on how to use my product webinar.
Yeah, no one cares about your product. They care about what it can do for them. So I'm very big on the idea of let the webinar kind of demonstrate the why and let the product come in as the natural how. Why is security important? Why does it matter? What are the implications of an insecure infrastructure? Case studies, right? And then the how is obviously the how is, well, if this is all resonating with you and this makes sense and you don't want to have exploits or whatever else happen, you know, on your systems, then look at AutoChark. I mean, that's the goal, right?
Yeah, there's a couple of different pieces to that, the educational side of things that help, because even if somebody comes to the webinar and they look at the product and they say, well, that's not really for me, if you didn't give them anything of value, they will probably never come to a future webinar. So even if they're not at a point right now and not ready to buy just yet, they may be down the road. And I think if you turn it into just too much of a sales pitch right away, they're going to get turned off. They're never going to come back to a future one, and you've lost them as a future customer.
I think this is true of webinars. This is true of newsletters. This is true of really any form of marketing.
So we've talked a little bit about the fact that the target audience should come away and have learned something. But one of the things that you have to also ask is, why should you use a webinar? When are appropriate times to use webinars?
I think there's a lot of different ways that a webinar could be used successfully. One of the ways that I think is underused is a way to kind of learn about your audience and what they need. let's say before I wrote my course on pricing for freelancers, I could have hosted a webinar to my list, to my audience, talk about kind of what I might even put in the course, right? Like just a feeler for, is this something that resonates with people? Like, do people care about this product that I'm thinking of putting together? And a webinar is a great way to do kind of real-time validation because you can talk to people about what it is you're thinking of putting together and kind of get feedback during the Q&A or even during real time. I think it's a really good way to scope out a product, but before you do the legwork of needing to actually build the product. The second thing that I think is the more used case is using it to promote an existing product. So if you have a software product out there, a webinar is a fantastic way of promoting it. I think the two real distinctions between a webinar and traditional kind of forms of marketing, like a newsletter or a blog post, are it's interactive, meaning people can say, you know, hey, Brennan, can you clarify what you said about XYZ? And can you tell me a bit more about that? And on top of that, and this is another big thing, is you can't skip forward. The attendee cannot skip ahead. So if you have let's say you launch a product and you put together a really good sales page, you know, a lot of people are just going to skip to the bottom, go to the pricing, go there before they actually know what the product is about, what its benefits are, and so on. The way that webinars are structured because they're live is you can't skip ahead, which I think when done right can really make them really valuable. Like I've had webinars where 40% of people who attended have bought from me because if they make it to the end, it's really self-segmenting. Is this for them or isn't it for them, right? Like they know what it is and why they need it at that point.
I really like the credibility aspect because when you come to a sales page, it feels like you have to work a heck of a lot harder on the back end to make sure that you're putting the right information up front to not only get the people who are going to read everything, but also to get the people who are going to just kind of skim the content to figure out whether or not it's for them. But with the webinar, as you said, you get a lot more engagement and they're hearing a live person on the other end of it versus a website where it's a little bit less personal. Right. But with a webinar, it's very personal because you're actually sitting there listening to the person who's talking to you.
Right, you hear a human's voice. A lot of them will have some sort of real-time chat where you can talk to other people who are attending. When I do a webinar, I break the ice with asking everyone where they're from. And it's really, really personal compared to, like you said, like a static sales page.
What are some of the disadvantages of hosting a webinar? What are some of the things that would actually turn you away from using a webinar?
So the first is that you basically need to show up to make it happen, right? With a really good sales website, the idea is you can just kind of let it run on its own. And if it's effective, it generates and drives sales to you. With a webinar, it still requires you to attend, like it's a live event each and every time you do it. So it requires time. But on top of that, it's one thing for me to blog weekly and to send it out to my audience, but they can kind of read it and consume it on their own time. Whereas with a webinar, typically you're making people schedule. Okay, am I free on Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern time? And especially if you have a lot of people from all over the planet, it's logistically harder sometimes and people need to really think, can I attend? Can I actually blank out my schedule for an hour on this date at this time? So that is, I think, one impediment, mainly for the audience, not as much for you.
I think it is a little bit of an impediment for you because you have to think about where people are going to be attending from and what segment of your audience you're basically going to ignore. I mean, we have this problem with the Micropreneur Academy where we'll host, you know, an academy conference call and we'll post a number and people can call in from all over the world. And we typically aim for like evening of like a Wednesday or Thursday. So it's evening for the US. We've had people calling in from India and it's 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. there. And it's like, wow, you're a trooper. You know, but when you've got a worldwide community like that, it's very hard to do those types of schedules without shunning some part of the world.
It is. And I've seen people who offer maybe two or three different versions of the same event. And they might have one be like 7 a.m. Eastern time. And then another what might be 2 p.m. Eastern time. And it's the same event. And it's really like you can then choose whichever one is best for you. So that's one way to kind of work around that.
Let's talk about some of the technical logistics. How do you go about hosting a webinar? Like what sorts of tools and technology should you be using or should you at least give some consideration to?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different options out there. My favorite, and it's also the most economic, is using Hangouts on Air. So a Hangout on Air is basically like a Google Hangout, but it doesn't have any limit to the number of attendees who can attend, and it auto records everything that you do. and what I do now is I put together a very simple static page that has two iframe embeds, basically. It has an iframe embed for Google Hangout, and it also has an iframe embed for a service I use called ChatRoll, which is a real-time chat widget. So I just put these two up, and that is my entire, at least the hosting, the viewing part of the webinar. There's also GoToWebinar, which is an option, but I think that's $100 a month. It's desktop software. I just like that mine only requires just go to a web page, and as long as you can watch YouTube videos, you can watch my webinar. So those are really the two main options. I think there's live stream also. I've never really used that. I would recommend for most people, probably Hangouts on Air is by far the easiest and most economic way to get started.
I signed up for GoToWebinar, and I did my first webinar through there. My 30-day trial recently ended with them, and they sent me this email saying, hey, your trial just ended. We'll give you $10 off if you sign up now. And I think it ended up being $39 a month instead of $49 a month. But that's for like their lower-end plan for only up to, I think, 100 attendees. Mm-hmm. The downside I saw with those was that the conversion rates were actually really low because they don't give you any customization for like the registration page. You can select which fields you want to get. Basically, just the user experience for signing up and registering for the webinar, it's completely in their hands.
The registration flow is horrible. You can't control, like you said, it. I don't even think you can control the emails they send out. Like, I think they send out like a reminder email the day before and then maybe one an hour before.
You have some flexibility there. You can set up a bunch of different reminders. You can pre-set up polls and stuff like that for inside of the webinar, and then you can also customize the emails that are going to get sent out afterwards. And then once they get all the registrations in, you can download them into Excel, and from there you could do a MailChimp import. Okay. You can do your own things if you really want to, but it's just that initial registration page, it does not convert well.
The webinars I've been doing, the registration page gets about an 85% average conversion rate. In the show notes, I'd be happy to link to one of those as an example. I like having the control over the entire registration confirmation flow, along with the emails that go out beforehand. Both, I like being the one to send it. So I actually use my email marketing software to do the registration for me. So I use Infusionsoft, but this could be done in Drip or MailChimp or Aweber or whatever. But really, all you really need to do is create a list for that webinar, design a custom page advertising the webinar, and then have an opt-in form, which is literally name and email. They get on that list, and then you really just have an autoresponder that is scheduled to go out. I'll send out a few emails before the actual event, and then I'll be the one promoting, hey, the event's about to start. And then after the event, I send out the replay email. I also send any additional emails that relate to the pitch that I had. I think you can do a lot with just even a free MailChimp account with Hangouts on Air. And ChatRoll does cost, I think, $50 a month minimum. Those three things, plus some knowledge of gluing it all together, I think can give you basically what you need.
Even if you're paying $50 a month for ChatRoll, that's only marginally more expensive than something like GoToWebinar. And there, you're limited to just 100 people. And plus, people have to download their stuff. And I found this out the hard way is that their recordings don't always work. So I recorded my first webinar, and then somebody had emailed me and said, hey, I missed the webinar. Can you send me a recording of it? I was like, sure. I was like, okay, well, this would be a good time to actually go check to see how well the recording is. And the recording was awful. It skipped all over the place. The transitions were terrible. It just did not work. I really had no choice except to say, look, I'm really sorry. This recording did not come out well. But I kind of was able to turn it around and said, hey, this didn't work out well for the recording. But if you'd like a personalized demo or a personalized webinar, I can certainly do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I love about Hangouts on Air is it becomes a YouTube video automatically, no matter what. You don't need to worry about recording. It does it for you.
So Hangouts on Air from Google, combination of ChatRoll and kind of a custom landing page for the people that you're driving it to. And then in terms of getting people registered for it, very simple integration with like Aweber or Infusionsoft or MailChimp or what have you, right?
Exactly. That's it.
That's basically all you need to handle all of the technical side of stuff. Let's dig a little bit into driving people to that landing page for the webinar. How do you drive people specifically to that page and get them to sign up?
If you're promoting to your own list, it's a lot easier, right? Because they're used to hearing from you already. They know who you are. What I've done in the past is I typically will send maybe two or three emails spaced out where I just basically, I talk about what they're going to get out of it, right? So I don't actually say, hey, join my webinar. Here's a link. Cheers, Brennan. I don't do it like that. What I'll do is I'll talk about an example of something that happened to me back before I learned how to price. This is what my life was like. these are the kind of clients I was working with and so on. And then I kind of segued from that into, I'm going to be talking about all of this and kind of what I learned over the years in building up my consultancy. If you'd like to join, there's limited availability, but click this link. And, you know, I'd also include the date and the time. I did this one launching Double Your Freelancing Rate last May, and I got quite a big turnout from my own list. And I think it was really effective too, because it's a way, like if you're just constantly talking to your list, it's really like a one to many, right? Like it's you up at the top and you're broadcasting hundreds or thousands of emails to all these people. There's no two-way relationship.
You're not getting that interaction.
Yeah, but it's one thing if you can invite your list to a live event, they can talk to each other in the chat role, and then they can also ask you questions and you can answer them live and you can say, yeah, Bob, great question. Let me address this. It's just a great way, I think, to really get to know who your audience is and help them get to know you better on a more personal level. That's what I would do with my own email list is I would think, well, is this a launch or is it just a meet and greet event? Or am I really doing a formal promotion for a product of mine? Again, it's always going to be better for that. Again, I get a very good conversion rate from my own list. I get upwards actually of 90% typically when promoting to my own list. But if you're going to look into paid acquisition or the typical social stuff, you're definitely going to get lower returns, right? Like you're going to get lower conversions. But some people like John Lee Dumas have done extremely well with paid ads when it comes to promoting webinars. So I don't know, Mike, if you've ever seen any of John's ads in your Facebook feed,
yep.
But he makes a kill. And if you look at his income reports, he does most of his sales through webinars. And I think it's useful because traditionally a lot of us, when we think of doing a paid advertising campaign, it's usually let's drive people to the marketing site and let's get them to hopefully buy. But when people are on Facebook or they're just browsing the web, they're usually not in like a pull out my credit card and buy something mood, right? Like they're just casually looking around. So I think if you can find lower ways really to convert people from a paid campaign through like a webinar opt-in or a email course opt-in or something, I generally think that's a lot more effective than just driving people to a product webpage.
Part of the way you need to think about it is putting them at like the first step of what your sales funnel looks like, because, you know, ultimately you want them to buy something way down the road, but there's all these series of other steps that you want them to go through first, or at least kind of start them on that path. So even if you get one touch with them, which is an advertisement of some kind, they're probably not going to buy right away, exactly. But you need to get them on that path somehow. And I think that using a webinar says, hey, just, you know, give me your email address and I'll send you a link to this webinar and you'll get a bunch of free educational stuff that's going to help you out. And if it doesn't help them out, they'll probably not come back. But if they do find any sort of value in it, then they've started on that path and they might start looking at you more. And eventually down the road, they say, hey, I've gotten enough value from this. I think that paying money to get whatever product it is that they're offering is ultimately going to benefit me far more than just listening to some of these free webinars.
Right. I think it's harder for you to promote to somebody who doesn't know who you are. Ask them to blank out their calendar and attend a webinar over here. So what I've seen a lot of people do is they offer something immediately too, like a downloadable worksheet or a PDF report or something that they get immediately on opting in. So that way they're not like, it's not like you see a Facebook ad, you click it, you opt in and then you wait a week before you get anything. You get something immediately, but you're also hoping that they can then attend the real event, which is the webinar.
Yeah, you're kind of satisfying that need for instant gratification that we're all used to on the internet.
Right. You know, a lot of people will say, fill out this worksheet before you attend, because a lot of it will be kind of in line with what they're going to be presenting on. Let's say I was doing a webinar on pricing. I might give people a worksheet, fill out these questions about, your experience pricing, what fears you have around pricing, just so they can kind of get that emotional buy-in into what the webinar will be covering. So they get that immediately. You give them something of value immediately. That thing of value really needs to coincide nicely with the webinar itself.
What I've seen, I think LeadPages did this, was they sent out, when I registered for one of their webinars, I went into it and looked at what they had sent over, and it was actually a worksheet that went along with the webinar. So their webinar was going to walk through a bunch of things, and it was almost like a Mad Libs thing where that was what the worksheet was, and you kind of had to fill it in, and it didn't make a lot of sense unless you actually attended the webinar to be able to kind of connect some of those dots. So it was kind of interesting, but at the same time, I looked at it and said, well, this is going to make me do some work.
I mean, you could just offer a free report or maybe like a free ebook download or something too, which isn't as intensive, right? Like you said, you had to go and like rack your brain and think through stuff.
you can tap your own email list. You know, you can leverage some paid advertising or use social networks like Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and various ads and stuff within those. Are there any other ways that you can think of that people can use to drive people to a webinar?
So I've had a lot of luck over the last few months with what's called a joint venture webinar. And what that is I will approach somebody with a complimentary audience, somebody else who has done kind of the groundwork of getting an audience of consultants. And I will say to them, I have a product that I think could be really valuable to your audience. But on top of that, I want to train your audience for free on kind of the gist of my product. There will be a soft upsell at the end for people who get a lot out of my training and want to take it to that next step. But it's not overt, right? It's not like a hard sell. But on top of that, I want to offer you, the audience owner, let's do a rev share of any sales that come as a result of that. So, you know, I think there's huge benefits for this. First off, if you go to an audience that has maybe tens of thousands of people, if they promote your event to their list, not only do you have a lot of potential sales that can come from that, but you're also going to grab a lot of new email addresses. So you're going to get a lot of new opt-ins, which is awesome. It's hard because unless you have, I think, the track record of your product and yourself being capable of delivering a large amount of value, if you have something untested, if you have a new product and no one knows who you are, and you go to somebody with a list of 100,000 people and say, will you promote this? You're probably not going to get very far. But I would look out for people that are either in your immediate network that you know through conferences or whatever else, and try to come up with something where you can say, I want to provide value to your audience. I want to make you look better to your audience by giving them something. And then basically having, you know, an offer at the end of really a self-segmenting offer, which is, again, if you got something out of this and you really want to take it to the next level, I have a product that will help you do that. But it needs to be, if all your webinar is doing is trying to sell the product, nobody gets anything of value out of it. No one will come back. And on top of that, whoever promoted you is not going to be very happy with you.
So this is more about credibility with those other people that you're trying to tap into for a joint venture. You might be able to go to them and if you pre-record something, that might help. But I think you're right. I think you almost need to be making that pitch to somebody who's near your level or maybe a little bit above. You probably don't want to go down. So if you've got a list of 1,000 people, you don't want to approach somebody who's got 10,000 or 20,000 because the return for them is probably not nearly as big as it is for you. So baby steps up, but you're not going to be able to make those huge leaps that you might have read are possible on TechCrunch.
Yeah, and they're going to want to see proof. If you've done this to your own list and you can point them to a recording, that's much better than having nothing else before that. You should definitely do this first with your own audience and start there, and then maybe eventually look at doing a joint venture.
Okay. One of the things that you touched on earlier was about when you're driving people to the list and being able to give away different things, so whether it's a white paper, various ways to kind of entice people to sign up. What is kind of typical for the registration rates? I think you said that some of them for your own list, you've seen upwards of 85 or 90% for opt-in rates. What would be kind of typical for, I'll say, the range of other options? So if it's paid advertising, what sorts of things can people look at to say, I'm doing well, or these are areas where I obviously need to improve? Because maybe somebody's getting 20% and they think that's great, but realistically, they should probably be getting 40 or 50.
I think you should definitely be getting upwards, I think, of 50. Everyone I know who has registration opt-in pages for webinars seem to be getting above that. And I think the thing you don't want to do is you don't want to have too much stuff that is keeping somebody from opting in. You know, it's typical kind of squeeze page setup where you don't have much. You have a headline, you have a very basic, maybe a sentence or two on why they want to attend or why they should attend, the date it's at, the time it's at, a type in your email, click join. Then maybe under that, a bit about who you are and maybe some four or five bullet points on what they'll get from it. I think the more you add, the less likely somebody is to opt in. At this point, you want to have as many people as possible opting in, because after they opt in is when you want to go and try to get them to actually attend. And I think a lot of us will look at I got 1,000 people, let's say, to opt in or to register, but then 100 people show up. Show up rates are very, very minimal. There are some things that I think we're going to want to talk about on how you can get more people to attend. But one of the things I love about, to be honest, about the joint venture approach is, you know, even if you get 1,000 registrations, but only 200 people show up, let's say, you still have 1,000 new people on your list. And this same applies for paid acquisition, doing social marketing, any sort of thing like that. I think you should definitely be aiming for above 50%. I think a really good squeeze page with not much you can do except put your email address in and click a button, you should be getting closer to 90%.
I think those are great numbers for people to kind of have at their fingertips. Now, what about follow-up referrals and things like that? So I've seen some landing pages where after you've put in your email address and said, yes, I'm going to, you know, claim my spot and confirm that I'm going to come to this event. I've also seen some landing pages where they'll essentially ask you to help promote it a little bit by either sending out a tweet or emailing friends, things like that. Do you see that those types of things work well or no?
I have actually. What I will typically do is on the confirmation page, I'll have a share on Facebook, tweet this link and say thank you. And I also have a little widget that will let them add it to their calendar. So basically the confirmation page is just simply stick it on your calendar and why don't you tell somebody about it? But in the email that I send out, so immediately upon opting in, I send them a welcome email. And this welcome email is very simple. It's basically, hey, I'm really excited. I can't wait to see you in the live event. Could you do something for me? I have a form that will help me learn a bit more about who you are and what you need to get out of this event. Like if you're going to give me an hour of your time, I want to make sure I cover what you need to hear. So could you click this link and fill out this form? It'll take you about a minute and just tell me a bit about what you need to hear from me on whatever date the webinar is, right? And that's just a link to a WooFoo form. Where literally it's, or it could be a Google form, but it's literally like, what made you want to opt in? So what drew you to this? And also, what are you hoping to get out of this event? And what I found is when people fill that out, and I found about half the people who have ever registered for my webinars end up filling out that form. So I get a lot of raw data, but on top of that, they're much more likely to actually attend because now they're vested. They're engaged with the event before it's even happened. If they've taken the time to say, I'm hoping, Brennan, that you cover X, Y, and Z, the likelihood that they'll then attend is much higher. But on top of that, after I link to that form, at the end, I say, can you also do one more thing for me? I want to make sure that I'm going to do my best to make sure that I address whatever it is you just put in that form. But can you try to get at least one or two new people from your network to attend that you think will get a lot of value out of this? Here are some, I usually will have three tweets that they can just copy and paste. And I've gotten a lot of people, like whenever I do these events, I will get a lot of people on Twitter who are sharing the URL, which just, again, gets more people into it. So that's typically what I'll do. That, and that's part of that first kind of welcome email that I send out immediately on opt-in.
So this sounds like it's a lot more of taking the corporate face or feel of the company that's behind the webinar and putting a person's face on it to say, yeah, although you're getting a webinar with such and such company, you're actually talking to me, Brennan Dunn.
That's right.
It's just got that personal feel to it. So you're creating this one-on-one relationship with somebody, not necessarily, oh, you know, I've got a webinar with BidSketch or whatever the company is.
No one wants to go to a webinar to talk to BidSketch or the company, right? Like they want to talk to a person. So I think it's important to whoever's going to be presenting for the company, I think needs to be the one who's behind these emails.
Some of those emails, you know, obviously they're aimed at increasing the likelihood that people are going to attend. What are some of the other ways? I mean, obviously, I think an email sequence and timing that email sequence leading up to the event is also a good way.
You need to get people excited, right? Like you need to get people to really, really, really want to make sure that they attend. Mine will change depending on how far out the event is. So I've done events where, you know, I've opened up registration a few weeks in advance. Typically, though, those don't perform as well. I found that just sending an email, like starting to promote the event less than a week before it happens, those tend to be the most effective in terms of turnout and overall how valuable that event was. So what I'll typically send is I'll send that welcome email and then I'll send another email, usually on a weekend, to be honest, like the weekend, the Sunday before. Usually I'll run events Tuesday or Wednesday. I'll send this on a Sunday, where I basically just say, are you ready, is the subject. And inside, I just reiterate why I'm excited to have them attend. But then what I'll do is I'll go and copy and paste a few of the responses that I got from people and almost use it like testimonials, right? Like I've struggled with pricing myself at $20 an hour for years. I don't know how to get out of that. I can't wait to figure that out, dash Laura or something, right? And I'll do this for maybe four or five of the responses that I got. And it's really just a way to really not only have another way to promote that, hey, if you haven't filled out the form, fill it out so I know, but also as a way to showcase that, first off, there are other real people attending. And secondly, people are just like dying for this info. And I plan on sharing how to fix these different problems that I just listed out. So it's just a way to kind of, again, remind people, hey, you've got an event coming up. And on top of that, really just build that excitement for them to attend. I usually send it the Sunday before the event. And then if my event's, let's say, on Tuesday, early in the morning, usually about 7 a.m. my time, I'll send out a reminder saying, hey, by the way, the event is coming later today. I'll also let people know then that here's the live link. I'll give them the live link for the first time. And I'll tell them to, you know, set an alarm on their phone, make sure it's in their calendar. They don't want to miss it, that even though there will be a replay, because a lot of people do ask about that, even though there will be a replay, you can't ask questions to a video. If you attend live, you'll have an avenue to ask me questions about what I'm presenting. So it's really important that they show up live.
Now, these are all things that you can essentially schedule well in advance because people sign up for it. Now, this is for specifically for the mailing list that you've set up for this particular webinar. Do you go back to your primary email list and continue trying to get people signed up for the webinar? Or I guess, how do you manage back and forth between those two lists? Because I don't think that you want to beat your existing subscribers over the head with your webinars, because I almost feel like if you're doing that, then it's almost like you're abusing them, the privilege of having their email address.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, I will typically only send two or three emails max about a webinar. I'll also make it, and it's easy enough for me to do this with a tool like Infusionsoft, I can filter out people who've already registered from getting those follow-up emails. So if you've already opted into the webinar, you're not going to get that reminder email to the general list about the webinar. So I do that.
So when you're giving the webinar, let's talk a little bit about some of the different things that people can do to keep people engaged and the types of logistical things that you need to deal with during the webinar. I think the first one is, should you record it? And in some ways, this seems like a no-brainer. I think with you, you're using the Hangouts on Air, which automatically records it, so you don't necessarily have to worry about that. But the question, of course, is now that you've got the recording, should you do anything with it? Should you repurpose that recording? Should you send it to people afterwards? I think there's some pros and cons there that you might want to talk a little bit about.
So I've done a lot of experimenting on like record, not record. Obviously, you always record it, but do you share the recording or don't you? What I found works best. The beautiful thing about Hangouts on Air is that live page that you send people to watch the webinar. If they refresh that page or go to that page after the event, it'll automatically start playing the recording. And that's just how Hangouts works. So what I'll typically do is after the event, and this is, again, part of that autoresponder for the pre-event and post-event, about 2 hours after the event, I'll send out a replay email where, you know, hey, you guys are awesome. Thank you guys so much for coming out. For those who couldn't make it, here's the video. But there is time-sensitive stuff that I mentioned in the video, so I will need to take it down on this date at this time, which is typically the end of your sales window. And this way, people who are geographically all over the planet and everything, they can watch it on their own time. Usually, it's a day or two window period that I'll set up. But the benefit of this is it's not just like an open-ended, yeah, you can watch it like a year from now if you want. There's still urgency behind it because you want people to watch the video, especially if you have a timed promotion. No one will act on that promotion probably until they've seen the webinar. So you want as many people as possible to watch the webinar. So I'll usually do a replay, but I'll take it down after a certain amount of time.
Yeah, I think that's really, really great advice. Now, when you're running the webinar, why don't you talk a little bit about some of the objections that people have and how do you address those directly within the webinar?
I think it would make sense a bit. You know, we keep talking about the webinar, but we haven't really talked about what is in the webinar, like format-wise and everything. Kind of the formula that I use for putting these together are, I'll start with icebreakers where I ask people again, where's everyone from? What do you do? And the live chat is great for this because they can just type into this and I can respond to people in real time. And then I'll jump into training. And the training is really just, there's two schools of thought with this. The first is you can either gloss over your entire product, right? So if, let's say you have a course, you could sum up the entire course in the event, but still make it so even if somebody doesn't buy the course, they still learn something. Or you can do alternatively, you can drill into one specific part of the product. So like my product plan scope, I could talk solely about client communication and how important it is to keep your clients abreast of what you're working on, progress, budget usage, and everything. And then basically the selling point could be, well, by the way, PlanScope does this, right? But it also does a lot more. So I really would have just focused on one core feature. And that would also allow me to do future webinars that kind of hop around the different features, benefits really that the product provides. So you'll typically do this training. I usually spend about 30 minutes doing that. You need to have a bridge. So the best way that I found to bridge the two together, let's go back to Audit Shark. Let's say you presented on the importance of security and how vital it is to really have a secure system. The bridge that kind of ties the training in with a product could be something like this. It could be, on the one hand, you could do what I did before Audit Shark. I manually went ahead and went into all of my machines, made sure all of these settings were set, it took a lot of time. You know, I was manually addressing and diagnosing and really running diagnostics all the time on all my machines. It took a lot of time. Or you could do what I'm doing now, which is why I built AutoChark, which is you could pay for AutoChark and we will do the majority of this for you. So it's really like, do you take the shortcut or do you take the long road? That's typically like the training should set people up so that they are equipped to take the long road. So you could teach about how they could do a lot of what AutoChark does automatically. You could train them on how to do it manually. Basically, the pitch is really, if this is stuff that matters to your business and your time is valuable enough that you don't want to do all this manually, here's the product for you. Like, I've built the product that automates much of this.
That's exactly what I did with my webinar, was basically talked a little bit about how to implement a security plan, which was geared more towards these are the things that you should be doing, and then kind of walk them through the process of actually doing that stuff and where to start, where to finish, and kind of what are the different gotchas and what, you know, what sources of authority you should be looking at, and then walk into the process of exactly how to verify those things inside of your environment. And then it was kind of like, and oh, by the way, if you want to not have to go to every single one of these machines individually and check all this stuff, this product will do those things automatically for you, and it'll pull back everything and you can report on it and slice the data however you like.
If somebody doesn't value their time all that much, they can take what you train them on and do it themselves manually, right? But the goal of AuditShark in this case is to remove that need, remove that time spent. That's typically what, like when I sell double your freelancing rate, the way I sell it is, this is stuff that I literally spent years of really trial and error on. How do I write proposals? How do I qualify new clients? How do I do all this kind of stuff? And I package that into a start to finish framework that is this product. And again, it's really like, yes, you can take what I just covered and kind of practice and tweak things and everything else. Or I have a product that will help you get to that finish line, the goal, which is the reason you're here, a lot faster than you would get there otherwise.
That's just a great tactic in general, because you talk about what they're doing, what are the different ways that they're going to accomplish whatever the ultimate solution would be. Walk them through the pains and stuff that they're currently having. So essentially, you're reinforcing the problems that they have to go through in order to do this. And maybe they know some of the different things that you've learned over the years to get from point A to point B a little bit faster, but the tool is really what drives the value. And that tool automates a lot of it.
That's right.
Or the service does. And that's really kind of what you're trying to do, is walk them through this point where they recognize where they are today and they realize what the potential solution is for all of their problems with, you know, the service or product that you're offering. And at that point, it becomes a much easier sell to say, hey, if you give us your credit card today, we can solve most of these problems for you very, very quickly, and you don't have to worry about them ever again.
Right. So after you do the training with that kind of that pitch, I definitely do think there needs to be some sort of urgency factor, whether it be a discount or some added benefit or something like that, right? And I found like having a day or two to get it at that discount or with that extra benefit is typically ideal. What I've done is, or what I found is that about 40% of people who end up buying do so either during the webinar or within an hour or so afterward. And then the other 60% actually come with the emails I send after the live webinar. So I already mentioned that first email, which is the replay. In that replay, I'll also usually include, there's a worksheet that I put together that's actually in the course that I give away for free. So it's a worksheet that coincides with a lot of what I covered in the live event. So I give that away also for free, along with the replay in that first email. And then the next day, I'll send out another email where I overcome objections. So somebody attended or they watched the replay and they're thinking, well, this is all great, but is this really for me? Like, am I at the point in my life where I really need something like this? So I really just help people self-qualify. I tell them, if this is where you are, then yes, you should do this. But if this describes you, then maybe you should do this first. So it's just a way to really help qualify people into, does it really make sense for them to adopt the product that is being pitched? And it's also a great way to really further describe on paper this time in writing a bit about, include some sales copy on the value and the benefit of the product. And so that'll typically be the second email I'll send. And then I'll send a final email, which is usually a few hours before the sales wrap up, where I basically say, if you haven't watched the replay yet, do it, because I'm going to need to take it off, because in that replay, I give out this coupon or this offer code that is going to go away. Like, it won't work anymore. So I'm going to be taking down the video. So please watch it soon. And I'll also usually include a link to the slide deck that I used. But I'll usually include some sort of like some closing testimonial, I guess, that really is meant to drive people to it.
So we've got the follow-up email sequence, the link to the replay, any additional documents or materials, link to the slide deck. There's obviously a very specific sequence that you go through that essentially kind of winds down that webinar. So you've got all the intro emails leading up to the webinar itself, and then you've got the wind down to whatever the end of that sale or the promotion is for that webinar,
that's right.
Correct?
Yep.
I think that's a very regimented sales process that you've probably tested quite a bit, correct?
Yeah, like I said, I've done this 13 times to other people's lists and about 4 or 5 times to my own list. And I've definitely iterated on all of this. And the way that I just kind of outlined is, at least for what I've been doing, the most ideal. Again, I've seen people who don't do replays. People like Ramit Sethi do not offer replays. So you either attend live or you don't see it. I think there's a lot of pros to that, but it's also, you could be missing out on some. There's a lot of other interesting things you can do. Like another thing Ramit does is he'll do things like he'll ask questions live. Usually not questions, more like things that he wants people to agree with. So like, have you ever feared X? Like, have you ever feared that a hacker could get into your server or something? And then like, if you have, let me know in the chat. So you'll just get a flood of like, yes, yes, yes. So it's just kind of like that, like psychological mass confirmation thing going on, right? So I've seen that work. I mean, there's so many different techniques and strategies, but I think ultimately you need to have a way to excite people to attend. You need to have an event that is informative, educational, and more importantly, ties really nicely in with the product you're trying to sell. And then finally, you just need to close the deal afterward.
I think that's all really great, sound advice. I think one thing that might be in the back of people's minds at this point is they have certain fears about running webinars. And what are some of the fears that people might come across in trying to set up their own webinars? And one that comes to mind that I've actually seen other people mention before is, what if I host this webinar and nobody shows up? Especially if you've got like a live chat there where people can see how many other people are in the webinar. And I think with your implementation of chat role, then if everybody can see what everyone else is chatting, then that might be a very valid concern. What are your thoughts about that?
I mean, I would use some discretion in that. If only 10 people register, I would probably not put chat role in, just because that means probably 1 or 2 people will actually attend. I think it might be a little awkward to have that happen. I think there's room for, you could even say like tweet questions instead of having a chat box. That's another thing I've seen people do, especially if you don't have a chat element. I mean, I do think chat elements are good, but if you don't have one, no one really knows. You know, you could have one person watching live or 1,000 people, and to the attendees, they can't discern how many people are attending, right? So you can't really fail. I mean, there's one person attending is not failure. It's not the goal you were hoping to hit, but it's still, it gives you practice. It helps you build that confidence so you can do it better next time. And on top of that, even if nobody attends, you could just try it again, right? Like, you could figure out, why didn't people attend? You could reach out to people, email everyone. One thing I like doing, if you've got a small list, I used to do seminars for my agency where we would do basically this, but offline at our office using seminars and networking. And one of the things that worked really well when you have a smaller audience is to email everyone individually who registers and say, basically that first email that I mentioned, do that, but don't do it as an autoresponder. Do it as a, hey, Mike, Googled you, found your website. Awesome. Looks like you're doing this. Really cool. Can't wait to have you here. Hey, could I ask you a few questions? You know, I'm still wrapping up the material that I'll be presenting on, but I want to ask you specifically, Mike Tabor, some questions that, you know, I want to know what you're looking to get out of this so that I can really tailor this event just to you. So if you've got a smaller list, or you're thinking that the reception won't be as big as you want it to be, maybe. I mean, I've had 900 people attend live, so I couldn't do that with them. But if you're talking about a list of maybe a few hundred people, it might be better for you to be a little more personal and to actually turn off some of the autoresponders and write people manually.
And the other thing that you can do, which I actually did, was I went through the list of people who'd signed up for my webinar, and I picked out different people to kind of look to see what companies they were essentially using a registration email address from. And then even the people who registered with like Gmail accounts and stuff, I was able to kind of backtrack through Reportive and, you know, identify people through LinkedIn. And there were people who signed up from 25,000 employee companies. It's like senior IT auditor at such and such public company. It's like, wow, that's a really good lead. I want to touch base with that person. Those are the types of things that you can also do.
Right. No, definitely. And I think that's, it's really valuable, both for learning. I mean, you'll get to learn who your audience is. It's just a lot more than just knowing I've got 500 people on a list, right? It's so much better when you know actually who's on that list.
And that's kind of leads me to the very last question, which is, after people have signed up for the webinar, whether they attended or not, what do you do with those email addresses afterwards? Do you essentially add them to your main list or what?
That's what I do. And the way that I've seen it work really nicely is have some sort of PS segue through your last email saying, by the way, next week I'm going to be writing to you on whatever the theme of your next email is. And I would maybe say, if you're not interested in getting my weekly emails on consulting, just click the unsubscribe link at the bottom of this email. And then by default, then opt in anyone who doesn't do that.
Very cool. Well, thanks for coming on the show, Brennan. I think it was very educational. I think a lot of people are going to get a lot out of this. Where can people find you if they want to hear more from you?
Awesome. So thanks, Mike, first off, for having me. I finally have a new centralized website. It's doubleyourfreelancing.com. It has 3+ years of weekly blog posts on consulting, along with all my courses and everything else. But it also has, if you want to send me an email, the about page, there's a link to email me.
Excellent. We'll link that up in the show notes. If you have a question for us, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690, or you can email it to us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups, and visit startupsfortherestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening.